streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Just like that, we're back. Thanksgiving week. This is the one and only episode of Late Kick Extra this week. Oh, you understand. It's Thanksgiving week. Got friends, family, traveling. Maybe you're traveling right now and you're listening to this and hopefully sharing it with a relative or a friend. Maybe you're in standstill traffic. I got out of Nashville one day ahead of time, apparently. Things not going well up there this morning. And speaking of this morning, it is, as I record, Tuesday, November 24th. There's a lot going on. In the world of college football, we got a lot to get to this morning. We do this Q&A style, normally twice a week. This week, just once here on Tuesday. It is you submit them, and I knock them down as many as I can. joshpate706@gmail.com is the email address. @LateKickJosh is the Twitter handle. A lot of flavor in this week's episode. A lot of really, really different angles to go at this morning. And obviously, later you get in the college football season, the more you have going on in different compartments. So we're going to be in a lot of compartments this morning. Two housekeeping notes right quick. The second is going to be completely out of left field. The first one, you know, I was doing Late Kick Live the other night, and sometimes you say things in a way where you think you've made the point 1,000 times, but you just happen to put the right phrasing together and it clicks. So, you know, I've been telling you occasionally on both the Late Kick Live show and this podcast, the Late Kick Extra podcast, that I've been doing some Zoom consultations because I had, over the course of the summer, been getting a lot of emails from college students, but also, I mean, people in their 30s, people in their 40s who have a passion for sports media, same as I did before I had ever gotten in the business. I was working in a fabric warehouse and I thought, hey, that sounds fun. And I think I have the talent and the ability to do it, but I have no clue how to get into it. No clue whatsoever. So a lot of you are like that. And I opened up my email inbox and I opened up my Twitter DMs and I said, I'll tell you what, I've done media consultation before, so I'll kind of open up a new branch of that just for my viewers, my listeners. We'll do it one-on-one. It's not 15 people, although I have done that in the past too, but I'm doing one-on-one sessions right now. If that sounds like you, because the other night when I was on the show, I said it, I think I said, if you think you have the talent or the tools or you have good ideas or you have a passion, but you just lack the game plan, then hit me up. Because I was there and I figured one out that worked well enough. And so maybe we can talk about it and you can get some advice, feedback, whatever the case may be, whatever it is you're looking for. I'll be happy to try and help any way I can. So again, email joshpate706@gmail.com, @LateKickJosh on Twitter. I got a couple of more slots open this week, even in Thanksgiving week. Actually, I'm home in Georgia, so I probably have more free time this week. So hit me up. I got a lot of you who reached out that said you had been on the fence and it apparently pushed you over because of the way I said it the other night. That's the first piece of housekeeping news. Here's the second piece. Let me clear my throat. You can leave that in there, Jordan. Very real and authentic. I'm in an editorial meeting yesterday, which is just a fancy way of saying a lot of us who work at 24/7 Sports talking about what we're going to work on this week. And something happened that, quite frankly, I should go to HR about, but I haven't. I'm a firm believer in talking out your interpersonal conflicts publicly instead of going to HR privately. It always works out well that way. So we're getting towards the end of the call, and I've been largely silent. Now, here's what the folks on the call didn't know. I had already come home. I wasn't in Nashville, so I'd already come home. And it was, whereas when I left Nashville, it was about 40 degrees and dropping steadily. Yesterday here, it was about 68 degrees and sunny. So I was out, I kid you not, on a little league baseball field that I grew up playing on in Catawba, Georgia, obviously all by myself. And so I'm walking around shirtless, by the way. Again, it is 68 degrees, not a cloud in the sky down here. So I had my video option turned off. So, you know, I piped in a couple of times, but then there were 20-minute portions of that meeting where they didn't hear from me. And I'm just kind of walking around out there on the baseball field, getting the last rays of sun that you'll probably get until 2021. We're getting towards the end of the meeting. And someone throws out an idea. It's, hey, do we want to do one of those things where we compare Thanksgiving foods to college football teams or whatnot? You know, basically that kind of stuff that is sort of ridiculous, but yet you see it one time a year. And in that one week a year, it makes sense. And so someone started talking about turkey. And Bud Elliott, in a very elitist tone, just chimes in and says, I'm a grown man. turkey's not all that great. Here's how I know it's not all that great. Because if it was all that great, I'd eat it every day. I'm a grown man. I can choose to eat what I want, and I don't choose to eat turkey. And so I understand the sentiment, okay? Turkey is not the most flavorful meat in the world, but it's a great lean meat. I eat it a lot. I also eat, as I've told you before, you know, my post-workout methodology, especially on the day of a show, is I'll go to the gym, and then I'll leave the gym, and as I'm headed to the office, I'll eat a rotisserie chicken. It sits in my passenger seat, and I tear it apart like a Neanderthal, but it works for me. Okay, but I also like to mix turkey into my diet, but turkey, it takes a lot longer to chew, and I realized a while back, I'm just wasting a lot of my life chewing turkey. That's just the way it was. Happy birthday, Bruce Hornsby, yesterday, by the way, who sung That's Just the Way It Is. But forget about Bruce Hornsby, let's get back on track, we're talking turkey here. And so I figured, I still want to have turkey in my diet. I don't want to take 14 minutes to chew this thing, though. So I realized I do not care about taste. Taste is irrelevant to me when it comes to nutrition. So I bought a blender and I wondered to myself, I wonder if anyone else liquefies meat. It's got to be possible. So I put my turkey in a blender, poured some water in there. There was a little bit of trial and error to get the sizing and proportions right, but I finally figured it out. So I started drinking turkey and I started mixing whey protein in there with it. So I would have a turkey smoothie. I do this to this day. Now, it's become a part of my lifestyle, every bit as much as breathing. And I do it, and I do it routinely. And so I just happened to mention that. And I swear to you, I've never seen so many torches and pitchforks and culinary elitists on one Zoom call in my life. It's like, it is America, as far as I can tell. I am just over here living my own life. And I got Barton Simmons, who drinks a goat milk, oat milk, whatever it is. Who knows where it comes from? It doesn't come from the same shelf that I buy my milk on in the grocery store. I know that. And so everyone wants to pile on the guy who's drinking the liquefied turkey. But the joke's on them. Because the other 23 hours and 55 minutes of the day, I got free to do whatever I want to. And then you got other suckers out there who are chewing turkey. I'm not living that life anymore. I'm living my life. And if it involves a turkey smoothie every now and then, which I can guarantee you sometime today it will, then so be it. Like I told Barton, I'm going to be around when your great-great-great-great-great-grandsimmons are listening to a 165-year-old version of me tell them what great-uncle Barton used to be like. So there you go. There is really no transition from liquefied turkey to college football, but we're going to try it anyway. Let's go to Alex this morning to start us off. Alex asks, what is the possibility of Dan Mullen leaving? Is the NFL the only route to be worried about? In the college world, yes, I don't think there's a job out there that he would covet over the Florida job. You're not getting better than the Florida job. I think the only path that he would take is, like you said, Alex, the NFL. There have been whispers about that in the past. It's, I think, even been something that Mullen has talked about in the past. I have no reason to believe that that's in the immediate future, nothing like that. So I wouldn't be worried about it at all, because you asked about being worried. I wouldn't be worried about that at all. In fact, I think a lot of the sentiment in the past about Mullen has been, well, let's break him down. He is a great football mind. He's a great play caller. He is a supreme developer of the quarterback position. Look at his track record. It speaks for itself, yada, yada, yada. What is the one area where he comes up a little bit short? Well, it's been recruiting. That sounds like an NFL coach. That's the kind of guy you look at and say, he's a great football guy. He's just in the wrong lane of football. He needs to be in the NFL. Well, now that they just beat Georgia, and now that we're approaching the early signing period, Florida's got some good momentum on the recruiting trail. I'm going to do a video actually with Steve Wolfong as soon as I get done recording this, and we may very well end up talking about Florida. Well, I say that because of this. What if, let's just, for argument's sake, let's say Dan Mullen did have that itch. Let's say even a year ago, he had that itch and he thought, if the minute I get enough success here to where I maximize my potential NFL leverage, I'm out of here. But then he got the success and then he started tasting that recruiting success and he realized, hold up, well, I can get paid as much in college as I can in the NFL, maybe more if you maximize your revenue streams. And secondly, I may be able to compete down here because long-term, because that's the second question that Alex asked here. Is there a fear that the Dan Mullen effect will wear off in a few years and we could experience a regression much like Michigan has with Harbaugh? That's the second part. And I just went ahead and threw both questions in here because I don't think so. I don't think so because the Dan Mullen effect and the whole Harbaugh deal with Michigan What would allow that to happen and what would allow your results to start eroding is if you didn't capitalize in the recruiting world on your success in the on-field world. And they are right now. That's not happening. So you don't, I think, have to worry about that. They are capitalizing in recruiting. Now you got to get pen on paper. You got to get guys on campus. They got to get developed. They got to contribute. We understand all that. There's no need to state the obvious. But right now, for the first time since Dan Mullen's been there, it feels like they're ready to go toe-to-toe with Georgia in some recruitments. And they're ready to win some head-to-head battles. I'm not telling you they're overtaking them in the team rankings this year or next year. But remember the belief at Florida. The belief at Florida, we stated it the week of the game, has always been with Georgia, don't have to have an equal roster. We have to have a comparable roster, and then we're going to beat them on game day. We're going to have better quarterback play, and we're going to beat them on game day. That was basically the formula this year. They didn't have a roster to match Georgia's. They had one good enough to get in the same room as them. They had superior quarterback play. They had superior game day coaching. That's the formula for Florida. They think it's going to work. I think it can work for Dan Mullen long term. And most importantly, as it relates to this question, I think he thinks it can work. Alex had a third question here. Is beating Alabama the only route for Kyle Trask to win the Heisman? No. I wouldn't necessarily go that far. I think by far it's his most likely route, but he is the odds-on leader right now. And I haven't looked at him this morning, but I looked, I think, yesterday, and I saw that the Vegas numbers have him as the odds-on leader. Now, that's a little bit different than setting odds on a game because there is a human element to this. So you're setting odds on something that has a human element. People vote on this. So right now he's the odds-on favorite, but that's not like Vegas being able to power rate a football team. Because you're not power rating voters. You can use historical trends to know which way they tend to lean. But history would tell you that, yes, in all likelihood, Kyle Trask, given the current trajectory, is going to have to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game only because the quarterback at Alabama, Mac Jones, is kind of right there neck and neck with him in this discussion. And you've got other guys like Fields or Trevor Lawrence, if they ever play football again. You've got other guys. So it's not one guy who's running away with it and he just has to turn in sort of a minimum baseline performance down the stretch rest of the season. Side note, get DeVonta Smith in the Heisman conversation. I'm telling folks in every radio interview I do, if you want to understand why I don't talk about Heisman much, it's because of this. No one lives up to the true spirit of this award. If they did, I'd talk about it all the time because the concept of the award, I love the most outstanding player in college football. That's DeVonta Smith this year, wide receiver for Alabama, for those unfamiliar, number 6. Check him out. He's pretty good. I don't get how he's not in this conversation. I had someone the other day give me 2 names from Alabama that they would put above DeVonta Smith, and that, of course, is Mac Jones and Najee Harris. I'm not taking anything away from those guys. I'm just giving a whole heck of a lot more to DeVonta Smith. So aside from that, yes, I think Kyle Trask beating Bama is the most likely route, but here's the side. What if they completely and totally slaughter the rest of their competition and then they go to Atlanta and he has an out-of-this-world game and they lose 38-35, a thriller, and he's 26 of 31 for 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and he just gets outplayed, but he gets outplayed in a manner where Bama's got 2 special team scores, a defensive score, and Najee Harris scores, and you know, Mac Jones really doesn't outplay him as much as the team for Alabama outplays him. You could have an outside shot. You could have an outside shot even if he loses in Atlanta to win the Heisman. That wouldn't stun me, but I think you're right on the money with understanding, obviously, his most likely route. All right, next up, I had a complaint the other day from a relative of mine, no less, about the way that I format this podcast. And there's a certain thing I do that aggravates him to no end. I knew what he was going to say before he even had the words come out of his mouth, because I would feel the same way. I have a certain habit. When I'm listening to podcasts, I have a certain thing I do. And I know a lot of you are the same way. But they got to telegraph it. The host of the podcast has to telegraph that it's coming. You can't respond as the listener the way you normally would. And you ask, Josh, what is this thing? Well, the thing is simply this. What if I were to tell you that Cole has a great question here that I think a lot of you have, by the way, and it's about whether you should want to make the playoff if you're going to be a significant underdog, or whether you should want to sit on the sidelines, go to a New Year's 6 win, get all the money, get all the prestige and the momentum going forward. And he wants to know it, but see, it's aggravating because I tell you we're going to answer it right after this.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the side. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes now streaming. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with the Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. The subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
See, that wasn't so bad. I mean, advertisers make it possible for us to be able to do the podcast. And if I were to tell you, if I were to telegraph that ad read's coming, you could just hit the fast forward button. You know, kind of like I do when I listen to podcasts. So I got to sneak it up on you as quickly as possible. Now, as for Cole, he did have a really good question. I wasn't lying about that. Cole says, as an Oregon fan, I felt both last year and now this year, we're better off almost making the playoff than we are actually making the playoff and getting crushed by a team like Clemson or Alabama. Last year, we ended up winning the Rose Bowl, which gave us momentum in recruiting. What are your thoughts on whether a fringe playoff team like Oregon should want to make the playoff, especially when they know they'll likely be toasted by more talented teams? All right, Cole, this is going to sound like I'm e-bullying you or pod-bullying you. I'm not. You know me. You know me better than that. Good George Strait song. However, I can't marry myself to this mentality. Now, I understand where it comes from. I do get it. I've heard, for instance, this week, I've heard Brigham Young. Well, I've heard theories about Brigham Young, rather, where it's thought, and I'm not so sure I don't agree with this, that they're posturing publicly to go one way, but really they'd be more than happy to go the New Year's Six route, win, go undefeated, and then be able to, you know, beat that 2004 Auburn drum. Well, we would have done this if we were given an opportunity, that 2017 UCF drum. Now, I'm not casting aspersions at the Brigham Young fan base. It's also been established. I say Brigham Young because when I say BYU, that's what I sound like, BYU. I have a very thick Southern accent. You may not realize it because I kind of put a blanket over it when I'm on the air, but especially when I'm back home, sometimes it can bleed through. There's a plate of grits next to me, by the way. Just a little side note. So if I tell you BYU, you have no clue what I said. I can't round the Y. BYU. That's what it would sound like. At which point, there are certain facilities you'd probably want to check me in. So Brigham Young may be doing this. I don't know. Central Florida absolutely does it. I all but certainly know. Would Oregon do this, though? Because Oregon is a bona fide Power 5 team. I cannot get on board with thinking that way. I just can't. It's such a defeatist mentality. It's a, for lack of a better term, it's limp. Don't be limp. If you're going to go wear one, go wear one. I mean, Notre Dame never hesitated when they got spanked by Alabama. They got spanked on the scoreboard by Clemson the next time they went. I don't think they were outplayed nearly to the degree that they were against Alabama a few years earlier. You got to get there. Listen, my philosophy is this. Go take as many swings as you can. Swing and swing and swing some more. Fortunately, I don't think there's anyone in the Oregon organization or in the Oregon program, I guess that's a better college term, that thinks that way. I mean, I really think you may get backhanded. And Cristobal's the kind of guy who'll do it, by the way. I think anyone around there who would even suggest that mentality, you know, imagine that. Let's go into the Oregon War Room, okay? It is 6:38 on a Tuesday morning. It's the middle of a game week. And they're, you know, filing in one by one. They're going to do their team meeting this morning, staff meeting at least. And Mario looks over and there's an analyst over there. And he's kind of got a sheepish look on his face, but you can tell he wants to speak up. So Cristobal says, go ahead and speak up. Well, coach, I was just wondering. Yeah, speak louder. I was just wondering. Speak louder. Coach, should we really want to make the playoff? Wham. That's it. Backhand. Just hand mark on the cheek rest of the day. Yes, we want to make the playoff. Absolutely, we want to make the playoff. But coach, we won't be favored. Who cares? We would rather do that than go play Catawba Community College in some New Year's Six Bowl. I don't know that Catawba Community College is going, but you understand my point there. They're not looking to gather New Year's Six Bowl awards. And added point here about the recruiting momentum. it's detached from on-field results a lot of times. It greatly helps to sell the Rose Bowl on the recruiting trail, and I'm not telling you it doesn't. I think Oregon would be doing just fine recruiting, whether they won the Rose Bowl or not. What if they lost the Rose Bowl? Can we look at four or five recruitments that would have been disproportionately impacted one way or the other? Do we think that a kid was sitting at home on the edge of his couch and he said, all right, I mean, that was a close game, by the way. So is there a kid sitting on his couch and he's biting his fingernails down to the nubs and outcome of this game, that's going to determine the next 4 years and therefore the next 40 years of my life. Wisconsin, Oregon, I'm going with whoever wins all the roses. I don't think so. So I think that'd be fine either way. Yes, Cole, to answer your question, make the playoff every single time. Adam is next. He's asking about Scott Frost. Why is Scott Frost failing at Nebraska? Is it geographical limitations in recruiting? If he's ever let go at Nebraska, what happens to a guy with an all-world resume that failed at his alma mater? Adam, this is really, really fascinating and really layered, and there's another layer that we cannot possibly see right now. Let me break it down for you a second. So he's failing at Nebraska, I think, for a couple of reasons you mentioned there. I don't think it's a lack of coaching acumen. Now, that's my personal take on Scott Frost. I don't think the guy went there and forgot how to coach football. I also don't think he duped a lot of people into thinking he knows the game of football to get the job. I mean, Scott Frost is a good football guy. I don't think anything other than that. And I don't think a lot of people who are close to the program think that. There are just limitations in place, like you mentioned, geographical limitations in recruiting. This sport never sits still. I say this all the time. The sport never sits still for very long. There was a time when Nebraska dominated the sport. I was alive. It wasn't all that long ago. I'm not 75 years old, and there's nothing wrong with being 75, but I don't have the memory. I can't go back in the memory bank to, you know, colorless TV like some of you can, even though I watched Andy Griffith when I was a kid just like you did. It was just already old when I was a kid, but I still watched it. You know, that Mr. McBeavy episode, by the way. If none of you have ever watched Andy Griffith, go check out the Mr. McBeavy episode. It'll jerk a tear out of the driest eye in the room. What was I talking about? Let's see. Let's trace back. McBeavy, Andy Griffith, colorless TV. Ah, Nebraska football. Okay, so I don't think it's that necessarily. I think it's a little combination of factors. There are certain limitations that you're not changing. No coach is going in there and changing it. I really wish in an alternate universe, I could just take Nick Saban and drop him at Nebraska. Rewind 10 years even. Take Nick Saban, instead in 07 of going to Alabama, he goes to Nebraska. I think they would be a good program, okay? Don't get me wrong there. But he's certainly not duplicating Alabama results at Nebraska. Why is that? Well, Nebraska has a resource inferiority complex to Alabama, as does most of the rest of the sport. Maybe the gap's just a little bit wider. Having said that, here's the third layer I'm talking about, Adam, that you didn't put in here because you couldn't have possibly put it in here. You said in the second part of your question, if he's ever let go at Nebraska, what happens to a guy with an all-world resume that failed at his alma mater? Well, the answer, Adam, is he'd eventually get hired somewhere. Here's the third layer. What happens if he gets hired somewhere and he succeeds? That tells you all you need to know about Nebraska. As a program, there's nothing wrong with the inner wiring of the program. It's strictly external factors that limit Nebraska. No one ever hates on Nebraska, at least neutral observers. No one hates on Nebraska. No one says, oh, that program's terrible. I'd hate to go there. They're morally bankrupt, ethically bankrupt. Never even a whiff of that. Everyone loves Nebraska, actually. Everyone views Nebraska as their favorite cousin or their favorite neighbor. Everyone loves Nebraska. It's not that. The people there are wonderful. The red balloons, everything's great. What happens, though, if he succeeded at UCF and then he failed at Nebraska and then he succeeds elsewhere and it's like a little failure sandwich? What does that say? I mean, when the only blip on the radar, the only downward spike is Nebraska and you got a guy succeeding before and after. Now, that would be the worst look. That would be really bad. And that's when you have to rethink some things. But yet I don't know that they're rethinking things even in that manner in a way that they already haven't. I don't know that there are answers that they're looking for there. Jim is next up. Let's see. Okay, yeah, there we go. Jim is next up. I heard you speaking on how you feel that Hugh Freeze would be a good fit for South Carolina or any school in need of a great offensive-minded coach. You explained that the AD and the boosters would need to accept him and be ready for the criticism, which would die down once he started winning. We all know what he did and how some of it is irrelevant now, so as long as he wins football games. My question is, What's your line? What would someone have to do for you, the person and fan, to say, I don't care how many games he wins us, I'm not supporting that guy? I want to ask you this question too, so you can think right along with me. What's that line for you? I mean, every one of you who are listening to this podcast, you're a fan of some program. Let's say your program has a job opening. Let's say Hugh Freeze would be a viable candidate. How many of you are saying no to Hugh Freeze for obviously off-the-field reasons? And if you are one that says yes, like I would be, then how much further? What's the line? Who would you not be willing to bring in? Okay, where between Hugh Freeze and all the way down to like Jeffrey Dahmer, where is that line? Where do you finally say, nope, not taking a step further than this line right here? Dahmer was a defensive guy, by the way. He wouldn't work in today's game. What's the book on Hugh Freeze? I mean, what are we really mad at here? Well, I mean, he had some off-field extracurriculars, if you will, but Oomst Among Us hasn't been caught with a burner a time or two with some weird numbers in there. Well, most of us, actually, myself included. But still, point stands, none of us are perfect. Secondly, I don't think that impacts his ability to coach a program one iota. So that, you call it baggage, I just call it life. That's what I call that. I couldn't care less about that. And the only difference, by the way, a little side note before I get back on the main road, the only difference between the scandal in Hugh Freeze's life and the scandal in a lot of other coaches' lives and just humans' lives are you know about Hugh Freeze's. And I'll leave it there, okay? If you could publicize everything about every coach in America right now, Hugh Freeze would even be able to hate on some of them. So I get back on the main road now because I don't care about that at all. What I would care about is his NCAA past. That's the baggage. So how much do I care about it? Well, none. Well, let me rephrase. I am cognizant of it. I don't care about it when it comes to being a deterrent for me hiring him or not. And the reason is because I don't think it's going to happen again, to put it plainly. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and I'll wear it, and I'll bear that burden, and you can fire me. Luckily, you can't. So all I have to do is talk in this microphone, and I can be wrong and not be fired. Well, about Hugh Freeze, at least. But I would look at it, and I would say, here's what this guy did. If I hire him, do I think he's going to do it again? Do I believe his contrition? I do believe it with Hugh Freeze. A lot of people don't take him at face value. I'm not going to go down that road necessarily, because I don't know him personally. A lot of people who say the same things about him also don't know him personally. But I would say this. Do I believe he's actually going to be dumb enough to do that again? Do I think he's going to be brazen enough to do that again? My gut feel is no. I don't think he is. And so I wouldn't let either be a deterrent or an insurmountable obstacle for me hiring that guy. If I think he's going to win here, if I think that he's going to put our guys in the best position to succeed, if I think he's going to be able to recruit, if I think when I hire him, the rest of this conference is going to let out a collective, uh-oh, they got Hugh Freeze, then he's my guy. Now, at South Carolina, I kind of had a change of heart on this with Hugh Freeze, not with the South Carolina job in general or Hugh Freeze in general. But with Freeze at Carolina, the reason I kind of went in another direction with Freeze in Carolina is because I think Carolina needs to hire a guy who views the Gamecocks head coaching job as a destination job. And I don't believe Hugh Freeze would view it that way. I think Hugh Freeze would view South Carolina as a massive step up from Liberty. But then I think he would look at Carolina and say, this is my launching pad job. This is going to get me to the top rung of the ladder. This rung right here is really nice, and I can make some money here, and I'm in the most high-profile conference in America, and I'm going to play on national TV 12 weeks out of the year, and I'm going to play in some of the greatest venues the sport has to offer. But I've already done that. I've done it at Ole Miss. I'm going to do it now at Carolina, but here's the difference. I'm ultimately looking to get one of the five best jobs in America, and I don't view South Carolina as that. Now, that's where I think Hugh Freeze's mind would be. So every game he won at Carolina, you would have two emotions. You would, number one, think, great, we just won. And then as you get a few years down the road, you'd think, number two, we just won. Everyone knows we just won. And there's a job opening coming open over here, and there's another one coming open over there. And, oh boy, they're going to come after Hugh Freeze, aren't they? You don't want to worry about losing your head coach. South Carolina has no business worrying about that. Find a guy who views your job as his destination. If that's Billy Napier, then that would be great. If it's a guy we're not even talking about right now, that would be great. And by the way, that's kind of a wrap on that question. But by the way, it's Thanksgiving week. But I heard at the end of last week, Carolina wants to move on this week. Now, a lot of folks want to move as soon as they can. It doesn't always work exactly on that timetable. But I wouldn't be shocked if you're sitting around this week and you all of a sudden hear, oh, we got major rumors over here. We got major action. It's a line out of Twister, actually, towards the very beginning. Different context, though. I wouldn't be surprised to see something popping this week, but I also wouldn't be surprised if we were sitting here next week and I was leading the podcast with 14 of you questioning, hey, I thought you said they were going to make a hire last week. No, friends. I think they want to make a hire this week. But I want to do a lot of things this week I'm not going to be able to do. So South Carolina, getting a head coach in the house, probably not among the list of things that I'm certain about. But I will tell you this. Because we're not doing a podcast on Thursday, I think we're going to be backlogged with questions, but I welcome it. So I'm telling you again, fill that inbox up, joshpate706@gmail.com with all your questions. Let's see, @LateKickJosh on Twitter. Had to remember my own Twitter handle there for a second. Also, asking for 5-star reviews in Apple Podcasts. You can find it wherever you're listening right now. Actually, you're already there. If you don't listen on Apple, then go find a buddy who does have an iPhone. Go find a relative who does. Find the Late Kick Podcast. Give us a 5-star review. We want to get to 1,000 of those bad boys by the end of 2020. Or the college football season, whichever comes first. That's a great question these days. So I appreciate you listening. We are going to do Late Kick Live tonight. We will have that episode. A lot of game previews. Got a lot of big ones this week. Friday, there's a big slate. Saturday, there's a big slate. It's rivalry week, believe it or not, in some cases. And in other cases, we'll have that coming up in the next couple of weeks. So I will see you tonight. Subscribe to the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel if you haven't already. And follow me on Twitter if you haven't already, @LateKickJosh. All right, I got to get out of here. You guys have a great rest of your day. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you so much for making the podcast something that we can bring to you every week. Have yourselves a great rest of your week, and God bless.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.